Hello and welcome to The Improverbial, a podcast where we unearth obscure sayings and phrases from around the world, invent absurd new proverbs, and talk about things mundane, spurious, irrelevant, and profound. I am the Capitalist, Pete Kirkwood.
And I'm Lisa Favette, the Tilt Thinker. I've been doing and coaching improv for many years. Pete and I have been doing improv together for some of those years. This podcast is a mashup of Pete's interest in the science of well-being, my background in education and human development, our shared fascination with the world's idiomatic weirdness, and our superpowers in improv comedy. We are the Improverbializers.
Woohoo!
Yeah!
Hey, Lisa.
Hey, Pete.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks. It's great being here.
Yeah, and I'm great. I'm glad to be here too. This is our latest episode, and it's going to be super fun because it touches on a bunch of things I'm interested in.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be fun for me at least.
Oh, I'm going to have fun too. You introduced this and I had never heard it, and it was so fun to research and think about.
All right. So this phrase or saying or proverb is to gastar pólvora en chimangos. Gastar pólvora. In chimangos, to waste gunpowder on chimangos.
Chimangos. And people might be wondering, what the heck's a chimangos? Wait,
that's not common parlance?
Oh, I mean, I knew what it was, obviously, but you know, for those that don't know.
A chimango is a kind of bird, which I will talk more about in a minute. But the meaning of this proverb, literally, don't waste gunpowder on chimangos, but figuratively, it means to not waste time or money on insignificant, useless, or non-advantageous things. Or secondarily, to not to uselessly waste time on an obstinate person or someone who just isn't worth the trouble of educating. So Don't waste your powder on chimangos.
Don't waste your gunpowder on somebody who's stupid.
Yeah. Is that what it means? It's like, don't waste your time. Don't waste your energy or efforts on things which are not going to bear fruit. You know?
Yeah.
You know, like there's some wild horse you're trying to break and it's like just never going to happen. And someone might just say, you know, no gasta pólvora en chimangos.
Those gauchos out there in Argentina. Yeah. So you said chimangos is we should introduce what that is.
Yeah, totally. So chimangos are a bird which are ubiquitous in the Southern Cone, which is like Chile, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, south of Brazil, the southern part of South America. And it's a member of the Falconidae family, which is where falcons are found as well. And for me, I just happened to, I've been reading this book. I keep on bringing things from books that I've read, but this book by Jonathan Myberg, and it's called A Most Remarkable Creature. And it's all about a bird in the same family. So chimango is a kind of caracara. Right. And caracara is the larger class of birds. And the one that he's talking about is a striated caracara, but they're in the same family. And when I was traveling in Argentina, I encountered these caracaras, this particular kind, the chimangos. Apparently have very tough flesh, not really worth hunting. So that's where the kind of origin of this phrase. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of them around. They're an amazing animal.
And you saw these birds. Yeah.
I saw these caracaras and I remember being amazed by it because they're big, pretty big, and they sort of look vaguely like a cross, like almost like a vulture, eagle, parrot mashup. but it acts kind of like a crow or like maybe like a monkey or a dog. Because they're like, there's documented cases where these birds are arguably the smartest birds in the world. They'll like steal keys and then they'll just play keep away. They don't want the keys. They just want to like make you to chase them. And they'll like walk up to people and like untie their shoes. Or there's one famous caracara that was trained to like fetch.
Really?
Yeah, fetch.
So
things.
That's when like a dog, right? Like a dog. Or
yeah. And they're mischievous. They just want to, they walk up to people in their native habitat. They'll like walk right up to you and look at you and be like, what are you?
They want to interact.
Yeah. It's
they
not just,
engage.
Yeah, they don't just want to. They don't just want a piece of food because they'll do things that have nothing to do with food. They'll play with a string for a long time or like tear apart a cardboard box. This particular one, Tina, could tell the difference between things which were round and things which were square. It could tell the difference between blue and yellow. Like the trainer would be like, go get me the yellow, ball and it would go get it. Or go get me the red brick and it would go get it.
Bring a brick?
Yeah. Or like not really a big brick. They're big, but not that big. And this one, in one example, the trainer like threw little figurines of like Nemo and Donald Duck and like that. And he would be like, okay, Tina, go get me Nemo. And like freaking Tina would go get Nemo. That's not what birds do. There's no birds that do that.
Well, they say the crow is extremely intelligent, but you're saying this bird is even.
It's like a big crow with a falcon crow vulture thing.
And as you're saying, interacting, not even looking for food, but to interact. It's a predator bird, right? Like it's a bird of prey, right? It's killing or it's a scavenger.
It'll do them all. Okay. This bird will, eat worms off the ground. It'll eat dead flesh. It'll kill animal. It'll catch fish from the surface of the water. It's like this generalist. It's a very interesting. And this whole book is fascinating about like evolutionary biology and, plate tectonics and all this stuff. This book goes into all kinds of history and natural history and geologic time and everything. And it's just really cool. This bird is unbelievable.
Yeah. Gosh, I had not heard of it prior to hearing this proverb. And so of course I needed to look it up and read about it and see images of it. And I would say like, if you look at it, it looks a little bit like a falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But with kind of a beak, a little bit more like a parrot.
Yeah.
Slightly curvy beak. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. To get the keys. It can hook the keys that way.
Yeah.
It's been evolved that way. But when I first looked it up, chimango, it's actually a food product.
Totally.
The chili mango slices is what came up.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I thought it was also like a pastry in Mexico. I think a chimango is a kind of pastry.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't read that. I mean, somebody just obviously.
Oh, chili mango, yum.
Chili, they branded it chimango, which I think is a nice, because mango is in there, right? Chili mango slices, doesn't that sound good?
It's really good. I used to have that in Thailand.
Green
mango sliced up. And they give you a little plastic bag and they fill it with sugar and chili and maybe salt, I think. And you dip it in there. It's like sour, salt, sweet, and hot all at the same time. Amazing.
Amazing. And it's so simple, right? But we don't do it here. But isn't it just simple to do?
All these Michigan mangoes going to waste.
I know. They're just rotten in the street. Could be Michimango.
That's like Michigan. That's a C-H-I.
Michimango.
Michimango. So we got a new product here. All you Michigan mango farmers, contact us.
Yeah, let us know.
We'll be your
branders. As I was learning about this bird, some of the translations were say it's like a crow or a hen or like the reason why you don't want to waste your gunpowder on this bird is because it's a scavenger and you saying that the meat's not good, but also because it does eat dead flesh, that you don't want to eat meat of something that has been eating meat. Mm-hmm. And it was saying how like vultures and buzzards, like you can eat like all kinds of like fur animals or feathered animals, except for one. And that's the vulture. It says like even dead buzzards aren't eaten by buzzards. Other buzzards.
I did not know that.
That was just something I was like, oh, that's interesting. Nobody's going to eat a buzzard. They say it tastes bad and it says bad for you.
You know what though? You know what eats dead flesh that we love to eat? Just harkening back to a recent episode. Lobsters.
Oh, they eat dead flesh?
Mm-hmm. Think so.
Oh, yeah.
Things that fall to the bottom.
Things that fall down. Mm-hmm. They're going to scavenge it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Just saying. It's not necessarily doesn't mean it won't be delicious. But also, chimangos, I think that people might have shot them from time to time because they're kind of annoying. They'll steal your hat right off your head.
So you think people are shooting them out of annoyance?
They might have been. Somebody's like, stop it. Plus they're probably hard to hit,
But they're hard to hit. So don't waste your gunpowder because they're going to just get away. They're so smart.
Fruitless. Yeah.
Oh, not because you can't don't want to eat you, but because they're going to attack you.
They're that smart.
Yeah. All right.
But so where I went with this from a bigger thought standpoint was like, this idea of wasting gunpowder and chimangos and not spending energy on a fruitless endeavor. Don't throw good money after bad. For example, that's another phrase that we say in our language. And it implicates this thing called the sunk cost fallacy, which is that people often will continue in a course of action just because they've already invested a lot in it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's embodied in things like religious cults, people at ski hills, which I'll explain in a second, and like whaling captains who keep on searching after the white whale that they really should just give up on, and go after the regular whales and like live their life. Like ski hills, like you paid for your ski pass and after the first run, you're like, oh my God, conditions are terrible. I'm miserable. It's super icy. I'm going to die. And they're like, we have to keep skiing because we paid for the
pass.
But the point is like the pass is paid for whether you ski one run or 50,
Right.
If you're miserable, just get off stop, the hill, right?
Go into the lodge.
And that's true about like, if you start a business or if you're engaging like, or in a relationship or whatever, like just because you've put a lot of effort in every day, you ought to be looking at starting today. What's my best course of action?
Still worth it. Yeah. Oh man. I can think of so many examples of me just saying, well, I got to stick with this because we paid for this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I need to talk to my husband about that one.
Like, hopefully not about the relationship part. No,
yeah,
but like,
oh yeah. Not that I will be ending any relationship, but he and I often are like, well, we paid for it. We better keep going.
Mm, it's just not good logic.
Okay. Thank you.
It's a fallacy. It's a logical fallacy. It's like, it's very compelling though, you know?
Yeah.
And it's what a lot of reasons why it keeps people in religious cults too. When I was in college, I studied a lot about religious cults, and this is one of the key levers.
I have committited to this financially, emotionally, time, and I've got to stick with it because otherwise.
I've alienated my family. I've made huge sacrifices. I've made a fool of myself. Yeah. It's not that I made a fool of myself. It's that if I admit that I'm wrong here, then I have to admit that I've made it. Like there's right. like a lot of effort that goes into overcoming the kind of inertia of the current course of action. And that's what the sunk cost fallacy is all about. And it's, you know.
Yeah. It keeps people going. I looked at this kind of this idea, like not worth the effort. I looked up which types of careers or jobs require a lot of training or schooling compared to what their pay is. Like basically you get a job and your school.
Oh my God. Every kind of like grad student who does like English literature or something, right?
Well, so they had like a top six. I came down with, I'll tell you,
like poor return on investment job.
Poor return on investment.
Okay.
So a recreation therapist. This does require at least a bachelor's. Some, a lot have masters in this. But the average pays between $24,000 and $30,000 a year. So you got a master's and you're okay. really just kind of scooting along on this. Uh-huh. The next I pulled out was mental health and substance abuse social workers.
Oh, yeah.
These require, again, at least a bachelor's. Some mental health professionals can make up in the hundreds of thousands. And that would be if you're a psychiatrist, of course, or even some psychologists. But social workers... bachelor's, master's, but about 38 grand a year is where they average.
Oh boy.
Now the number one, and I'm going to
number
cover,
one, terrible, terrible
number
investment
one
job.
Where you need a lot of training and the pay is just crap.
Oh man. School teacher.
You know, I thought that too. Cause
I'm kind of a teacher.
You think cause your master's is requiring the ongoing training. It did not make the list. Mm. So I'm going to really contest this list. According to this list, reporters and correspondents.
Oh.
So reporters and correspondents, obviously a bachelor's at least, but then they usually have a specialty. So like I cover finance or I cover world affairs or I cover.
Ironically, I cover finance.
Yeah. And yet I make nothing. So between 20 and 34,000 is what a reporter or correspondent Ooh. Make it. And they have to have a specialty. And of course have such a breadth of knowledge that they would need an experience in order to cover it fully, not compensated. And I was just going to say, now I had a neighbor when I was living in Belgium who is a correspondent. She's freelance. She covers the EU. She covers NATO. She did one, I don't want to reveal, but a very well-known national US radio program. She did one that she had worked like the week on, she had to get the quote. She had to verify all of her facts. And for her, and granted, it was a 2.5 minute segment, but a week's worth of work. Mm-hmm. She had $200 for it. So it's really painful.
Totally painful.
Totally painful.
Of course, that list is all about economic returns. And I'm not trying to like say that it's okay that, you know, correspondents get paid so little when investment bankers get paid so much. And to be an investment banker, you know, you don't need that as high a level of education. Take it from me. I was an investment banker just after college. So that's what it took. I didn't have to get a graduate degree or anything, but like the life, you know, I'd way rather be a recreational therapist than an investment banker. You can keep your money.
Yeah.
And from a standpoint of, you know, all the science of well-being science, all the science of, you know, in the study of well-being and happiness is clearly is a better choice to choose a job that is intrinsically satisfying.
Yeah.
than one that just pays well. You know, it's a continuum, but usually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's why we have school teachers. You know what I mean? It's, you know, this is a calling, these journalists who are risking their lives and not getting a lot of financial bank return, obviously having a lot of influence in the world, getting voices out there. So there's obviously other
returns. Still something wrong with that setup.
I know. Yeah. Pete, here we are. We're in this second section of this great episode.
We made it here
All the way from Patagonia, where we were getting some chimanga for our lunch today.
Chimangas. The meat is tough.
The meat is tough, but I heard it makes you, I don't know, brings your IQ down a few points, which is what we're both looking for. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's hard being this way. They were hard to hit though. Remember?
Yeah. Really with hard to get them. I wasted a lot of gunpowder on those birds.
We still have some though. A little bit of gunpowder
left. Yeah. To catch that.
The
dodo. Cause there's a dodo out there and I want to get that last one.
Speaking of intelligent.
I heard they're delicious.
Speaking of intelligent and delicious.
Okay. So we'd like to thank the Boardman Review for sponsoring, not just this section. They sponsor the whole damn thing. Mm-hmm. Those guys over there. This section is entirely made up. We're making it up. I know it seems unbelievable because we're so incredibly smooth. Like those two are just so incredibly together. How could it be made up? But it is, folks.
So smooth.
And let's get this thing started.
You want to prime it?
I'm going to prime the Proverbaton. Mm-hmm. Prime it. Like the, if you can imagine, folks, like a lawnmower where you had to like pump that little top. What is that? Like a little squeegee thing where you
thumb bubble.
The thumb bubble. And we have to do that. Here we go. I think we're good.
I think it's ready.
All right, here we go. I'm going to push the button here and.
Popsicle.
Popsicle. Our first word is popsicle.
Well, I guess I'll take my turn at it. Do I need to prime it or is it already
warmed
up?
You need to prime it again.
Okay. Okay, I think it's ready.
Hellhole.
Oh, whoa. Hey, this is slightly rude. A little bit, not really. This word is hellhole. It spit out hellhole.
Hellhole? Which of our listeners sent that? Whoever you are, you're naughty.
That was naughty. Thank you, though.
Oh, Pete, popsicles in hellhole.
Oh, God, obviously.
This was just so obvious.
How do our listeners know? And the Proverbaton, it's like it sorts through and somehow spits one out.
Every time it happens. And it's because of the generous contributions of the Boardman Review with the algorithm that they put together.
Also Elon Musk's recent donation of $4.5 million in Twitter stock.
Into our show.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, of course. Into the show too, of course.
I mean, Elon, thank you.
Thanks,
once
buddy.
Again. All right. So our proverb. Popsicles make every hellhole more whole.
Every hellhole more whole.
Yeah, every hellhole. I mean, if you think, okay, let's think of a hellhole.
Yeah.
Just think of a hellhole. Like a refrigerator without milk.
Well, you know, Lisa, you are so creative because that's such a mild kind of a hellhole. I was thinking
if you are a cereal addict like me, this is a hellhole. Like, what the hell's going on? How am I going to? Then I have to put water on my cereal. That sucks.
It's the worst.
That sucks, but I'll do it because I love cereal.
Gosh, for me, a hellhole is like, I was imagining like, you know, flaming demons rending my flesh.
And how often
from
does that
my
happen?
Bones and then grinding my bones up and then dancing about on my grave.
And cackling.
Yeah. And yeah,
that's hellhole for you.
More of a hellhole.
But
yours is also good.
I feel like you're mocking me. And okay. So
like the devils were doing in my hellhole to my.
So I was just going to say, you gave us description of what, you know, this, let me give it. Okay. I wake up. My stomach's like,
Oh,
I can't wait for that sweetness of honey bunches of oats.
Oh, man.
Oh, I'm going to go down. It's going to make my day.
Totally.
I have a shitty day in front of me, but you know what? That honey bunches of oats. So I go down. I don't get the regular size bowl. Mm-mm. I get the big, like actually my family's not home, so nobody can see me. I get like the mixing bowl that you'd use to make cookies.
Do you have a regular size spoon or like a,
it's kind of like a, like what you would eat, like
ice cream scoop size.
No, like a gruel.
Oh, a gruel spoon, like a paddle or like a wooden.
like, yeah, but it's got a little bit of indent on it, mm-hmm. but like where you would mix up, you know, like some type of, wizardry.
Oh, like in a cauldron type of
thank
spoon.
Thank you. See, Pete, you always thank got you. The words.
Thank you.
So I fill up the bowl. I'm already, I might cut some fruit on there. Cause come on, I'm health conscious.
Wow. Okay. And then,
and then you open the refrigerator. Like,
I'm already,
and there's no milk. So you got some choices, right? You could like get on some shoes and some clothes and go to the store, or you got to make it wet and you put some water over that and it doesn't taste the same.
Not at all.
And it's a living hell.
It absolutely is. And you know what? I retract my previous statement because that's way worse than having flaming demons rending your flesh from your bones and grinding them up and dancing.
And
about
then
in
dancing
your grave.
And cackling. Thank you.
You know, it's way worse. You're right.
All right. Sorry so about that. We got the hellhole. We're totally, imagining
but it's,
that.
It's funny because it is connected, right. You know, what you've already said to the meaning of this proverb, you know, that feeling that you have.
The feeling that like life's not worth living because that's what I feel like, that I don't want to go on.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing keeping me going is my cute dog looking at me saying, "You gonna take me out for a walk?" I'm like, all right, I will go on because I'm going to take you out.
And actually that's why you named your dog Popsicle.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Because like, I know that you love, this is a particular favorite of yours.
Yeah. And of course I, for short, I call my dog
Poppy.
Sickle.
You've
been calling Sickle. His name's Sickle. Oh, I call him Sickle.
Oh, geez. I guess you've always been more formal when I'm around.
I call him by his formal
name. Mr. Popsicle.
Yeah.
But I've always heard you call him.
When we're alone.
Or Poppy. Maybe I was mistaken.
That's a little bit your pet name. I never corrected you.
Oh, thanks for, and glad that we learned that now. It's like, so I won't embarrass myself next time.
This helps
But
us.
You know that feeling? So let me just get down to this. That feeling when, like you're enjoying your,
cereal.
Let's say an ice cream cone. I know you're into cereal. Let's say an ice cream cone, right? And you've like, a cookie, a chocolate chip cookie.
Okay, I'm on board now. I'm on board. Okay.
And then you've like eaten all the cookie part around it. You've gotten rid of all the extra cookie that's in between the chocolate chips. All that's left is that like little chunk that's like almost all chocolate chips.
The cluster,
And your mouth is so ready for it. And you're like, and you're opening your mouth and you're about to put it in there. And then like a strong wind comes by or a chimango comes by and snatches it out of your hand. That's what this is all about, right?
Or that
is a feeling that you just, everyone knows that feeling.
Yeah. Or there's no milk.
Or, right. Exactly.
Oh my God.
That's my own
mistake. Don't bring me back to my hellhole.
Same thing.
Why
that's
are you
the
bringing me? You know, you re-traumatize and we're supporting each other. And yet you bring it back to a chocolate chip cookie. You could have brought it to anything.
Well, I didn't bring it to cereal though, at least. So I was trying to be sensitive to your feelings, Lisa.
Okay, Pete, Taylor, can you shut these mics off just for a second? Pete, no more food that goes well with milk.
I'm sorry.
Right, let's take it off there.
Okay, well, maybe we can get that part edited out. Right. The part about the chocolate chip cookies and the liquid that will not be named.
You just cut it out.
Okay.
All right, Taylor, I think we're ready to go back.
Okay, so.
Oh, Pete, this is really fun. I really enjoy
so much fun
our conversation.
But to try to just tie it all together, I'll try to avoid saying anything that might be traumatizing for anyone, any of our listeners.
Yeah.
Or anyone
we might need to put a label on this one. It's trauma inducing.
Warning.
Yeah.
That feeling you have when your mouth is ready for a thing.
Yes. So that reminds me of something. And then
that thing just gets stolen from you or disappointingly absent.
Right.
That's where this came from.
Like a kiss.
Or like you're leaning in.
Right.
And you
think that moment's there.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stephen turns his cheek right when you're about to plant and you get the stubble and you're like,
mm-hmm.
Stephen King, I thought we had something going on. I don't want to talk about this.
Real Stephen. Stephen King and I.
He's a popsicle.
The King and I. Were you guys in a musical together? Maybe?
We do. And I could have danced all night.
Oh man. I hear he's a dancer. He's quite a dancer.
He.
You'd think he would be heavy, you know, in his boots, but he's light on his feet. So here you go. Popsicles make every hole more hole. This is when you say it just to finally seal it up. Okay. Right. It's like, when you think you're going to get a kiss from Stephen King and you end up with a stubble filled mouthful of stubble,
right.
Or for example, some other kind of food product with some kind of liquid that you wanted to have. And it turns out you lost either the food product or the liquid. Then what happens is you turn to the next best thing.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the popsicle. In your case, it's your wonderful dog, Mr. Popsicle, otherwise known as Sickle. Mm-hmm. Makes everything okay afterwards, right? Or if like you try to kiss Stephen King and then it doesn't work out.
I just stick a popsicle in my mouth.
Or you could actually be a actual popsicle and that's—
I do.
Yeah.
And that's why I think a lot of people carry emergency popsicle supply.
Yeah.
And that's why the freezer industry, a portable freezer industry has boomed since this came about. I mean, if we could look at the statistics, which—
Since the advent of this saying, but this thing, you know, it's just the thing, no one really knows where it came up.
Right.
It's just the thing you say when that you're anticipating something gets taken away and you turn to the next best thing. Popsicles make every hole more whole.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of The Improverbial. Do you want to improvise with us? You can yes and The Improverbial podcast and be a sponsor. Please reach out to theimproverbial@gmail.com.
Yeah.